We've been talking about how to prevent the infiltration of psychology where it shouldn't be in the counseling approach. And one of the means that we've been talking about is the need for personal Bible study by the counselor. There is a current trend among evangelicals to replace Bible study with the reading of contemporary evangelical literature. This trend has allowed for the development of an evangelical worldview that at many points is out of sync with Scripture. By reading what other evangelicals are thinking rather than what the Word of God is saying, we have allowed ourselves to develop a worldview and subculture that is at many points detached from the Bible. One person has an idea, then another person picks up on that idea, and so forth, and pretty soon we have, this has all worked together to develop this worldview that is not solidly rooted in Bible, but what other evangelicals think. These points of dissonance almost always involve unbiblical psychological concepts. For example, it seems that in the absence of serious personal Bible study, many evangelicals have developed a more of a psychological than biblical view of Jesus and his ministry. Frequently, Jesus is portrayed as having interacted with his disciples in the mode of a Rogerian therapist, conveying understanding and acceptance regardless of their words, attitudes, and behaviors. Even a casual reading of the Gospels demonstrates that this is not the case. The fact is that Jesus was very tough in many of his interactions with his disciples, so much so that some passages indicate that they were afraid to ask him certain questions. Serious Bible study would prevent such error from forming and being propagated. Because evangelicals have been so susceptible to the infiltration of psychological ideas, it is important that safeguards such as those described above be put into place and maintained. As we have seen, psychological personality theories have tremendous appeal even though they are erroneous. Therefore, it is essential that we are proactive in guarding against them. Now let me answer a final challenge regarding the position advocated in this course. In this course, we have responded to a number of challenges to the approach to psychology and counseling that is offered. One last challenge that needs to be addressed is that the approach described above is not effective. No doubt all of us have heard someone say regarding a biblical approach to counseling, "I have tried that and it did not work for me." One reason to the challenge that biblical counseling is ineffective has already been given. That is, that some psychological problems can be very difficult to deal with regardless of the approach used, and that for them a biblical approach is no less effective than any other one. For example, severe brain damage may lead to significant behavioral problems that may not be responsive to any approach. The only hope in such cases is found in a supernatural work of God. However, the "I have tried that and it didn't work" accusation against biblical counseling is frequently applied to more mundane problems such as depression and anxiety. In response, first let me affirm that when applied biblically, the biblical approach does work. God supplies both the understanding and the power to make it work. I believe that it does not work for some people because the approach they have tried was not genuinely biblical or comprehensive. In other words, when they say, "I've tried that and it doesn't work," the fact is that they've tried something, but what they tried was not genuine biblical counseling, or at least they didn't try it in a comprehensive way. It has been my experience that attempts at a biblical approach to problem solving that fail frequently do so for two reasons. The first has to do with the fact that a biblical approach to problems is comprehensive. The Christian life is holistic in nature. Therefore, biblical counseling calls us to bring all available resources to bear on the problem. This often requires the exercise of various disciplines. These include, but are not limited to, daily input from the Word, a meaningful prayer time, and a dynamic connection with a good church. In addition, a spiritual solution requires that the counselee take his focus off self and place it on others. This requires a disciplined thought life. If a counselee is not willing to do the necessary work in this area, he will not succeed. For example, I find that some depressed people will not persevere in weeding out their negative thoughts. They do so for a while and make good progress, but they do not practice this new way of thinking long enough to establish new patterns. Other disciplines include finding and taking a way of escape from sinful inclinations. The person with the habit of stopping at a bar on the way home from work every night and drinking too much will need to find a different way home or have his wife pick him up in order to avoid the temptation. Some counselees are not willing to make these kinds of changes. Some married couples embroiled in conflict are not willing to spend time together in prayer. A counselee who views pornography on the internet may not be willing to get a filter or remove his internet connection completely. I have found that people who claim that a biblical approach to counseling did not work for them either were not counseled regarding the full range of changes necessary or were not willing to make the changes that were within their reach. Often the latter is the case. People tend to look for a means of change that is not too demanding, such as approaches that call them to delve into their past and ventilate anger for the injustices that they feel were done for them, an approach that can be actually quite enjoyable at a perverse sort of level, or approaches that promise change by feeling better about themselves regardless of their lifestyle. And this is a very appealing approach to change. The reason you have your problems, you don't like yourself enough. The solution is, regardless of how you're living, to like yourself more. These humanistic approaches seem to help, just as getting a higher interest loan seems to help people involved in personal financial problems. But in the long run, these approaches based on personality theories tend ultimately to make the problem worse. On the other hand, an approach that teaches and encourages spiritual disciplines is slower and harder, but builds one's life on a solid foundation and produces positive long-term results. In conclusion to this course, let me say a word about the need for professional help. Let me conclude by asserting that those with serious behavioral, emotional, and relational problems do need professional help. But please listen carefully to what I mean by that. Saying that the counseling ministry of the person with theological training can be enhanced by the addition of extra biblical input is in some sense to call for professional help. In other words, we're saying that for a counselor to really be professional, he needs both theological training and he needs to have education in psychological areas that give him the information necessary for the periphery of the counseling process also. However, I am not using the term professional help to refer to the secular psychologist or even to the evangelical psychologist or counselor who uses secular concepts in his core counseling framework. Rather, the need is for a professional biblical counselor, that is, a counselor that utilizes a well-developed biblical framework and who also draws on a full variety of valid extra-biblical input. Some evangelicals would view such a call for professional help as heresy. However, almost all of those same people would no doubt want professionals serving in other roles in the church, such as the pastor or minister of music. Because the core of the counseling approach is biblical in nature, the individual with theological training possesses the essential ingredient for counseling and is capable of doing so at some level, just as a seminary student with a theological education but with no homiletical training can preach at some level. In fact, the counselor with only theological training is more capable than secular or evangelical counselors with theological training who utilize unbiblical personality theories. However, because the study of valid psychological findings and methods can enhance the counselor's effectiveness, the more exposure the person with a theological foundation has to these added materials, the more effective he can become. As with other areas of ministry, the greater the grasp that the biblical counselor has on the valid extra-biblical expertise related to his area of ministry, the greater his prospects for effectiveness. Just as a minister of music with a high level of expertise in the area of music will be more effective than a person without that expertise, all other things being equal, so the person knowledgeable in the areas of valid psychological expertise will be more effective in counseling. The tragedy, however, is that evangelicals often have to choose a biblical counselor who is not knowledgeable regarding extra-biblical input, or a counselor with psychological expertise who does not use a biblical approach. For example, Christian parents who are seeking to help an anorexic daughter may have to choose between a biblical counselor who may not be well acquainted with the basic characteristics of anorexia, its physical dangers, and the psychological forces that frequently drive it, all factors that can be learned from psychology, or a secular or evangelical counselor who is acquainted with all of the above, but who will perceive the problem from an unbiblical perspective and apply unbiblical solutions. The reason for this state of affairs is that, for the most part, the evangelical community, rather than developing its own counseling approach that uses a biblical framework and an extra-biblical periphery, has looked to secular psychology for its counseling framework. And a smaller contingent within the evangelical community has committed itself to a biblical framework but has rejected extra-biblical input, thus failing to take advantage of legitimate extra-biblical findings of the secular community. Neither approach provides counseling that is both biblical and professional. Our position is that there is a need for a professional counselor who maintains a biblical core but is also knowledgeable in valid psychological expertise. This assumes that this counselor does not fall prey to the seduction of erroneous psychological theories, which means that he must have the theological sensitivities to filter these out. I continue to emphasize this point because these theories are seductive and many evangelicals have been deceived by them. I have seen some people go for training in counseling with a thorough commitment to the Bible only to fall under the spell of unbiblical psychological concepts. Therefore, in advocating for the value of psychological concepts, I sense a responsibility to sound significant warning regarding the dangers. One way to avoid these dangers is to stay away from psychological input altogether, a path that some have chosen. We encounter this issue of whether to forego benefit for the purpose of safety in many aspects of Christianity. My sense is that seeking safety at the expense of optimal effectiveness usually constitutes the wrong option in the long run. For example, Christians can avoid the corruption of politics by non-involvement. But the price is abdication of the political arena to secular forces. Evangelicals have gone that route in the past to their detriment. Regarding the study of psychology, I believe that it is better to become significantly astute theologically in order to avoid the pitfalls of psychology and then to take the risk of exposure to the field of psychology, gleaning its benefits. The tendency among evangelicals to either buy into the unbiblical concepts included in personality theories or to reject psychology altogether has resulted in the failure of the evangelical community to develop a distinctively biblical psychology that maintains a biblical core but utilizes the valid concepts of psychology at the periphery. This failure of evangelicals to develop a comprehensive biblical psychology is especially tragic because it has robbed evangelicals of their rightful place at the head of the psychological world. This is their rightful place because the biblically oriented, theologically sensitive scholar is the one who is best qualified to analyze empirical psychological input, because his analysis is not corrupted by an erroneous humanistic worldview. Also, the scholar beginning with a biblical core is best positioned to fit empirical input into a valid framework. He's the one starting with the right framework anyway, and so he can take the empirical data and has a good framework to fit it into, and therefore he has the basis for developing a great psychological approach. Therefore, had the evangelical community not embraced corrupt personality theories, and had it been open to valid psychological data instead, utilizing a biblical core and incorporating valid psychological concepts at the periphery, evangelicals could have developed the most accurate and effective understanding of the human being. his problems, and their solutions, thus making evangelicals leaders in the field of psychology rather than followers. As a result, evangelicals could have made a great contribution to human well-being and used a biblical psychology as a tool for evangelism. The tragic fact is that evangelicals failed to realize that psychology is their field, that the core aspects of psychology belong to the domain of the Bible. This failure has resulted in secular psychologists with secular concepts moving into what is rightfully biblical territory and corrupting it. And to add insult to injury, evangelicals have adopted these corrupt ideas, using them to replace effective biblical ones. The responsibility for this tragic error cannot be placed totally at the feet of evangelical psychologists. It was made possible by the failure of evangelical theologians to function effectively in their role as ideological gatekeepers. It is difficult to understand why teachers and pastors with theological training did not identify and condemn the unbiblical psychological concepts that invaded the evangelical community. In fact, it is difficult to understand why they are not doing so today. It seems that others, without theological training, can be far more sensitized to dissonance between psychological and biblical perspectives than are most evangelical pastors and theologians. For example, James Davison Hunter, a sociologist who has done extensive study on evangelicals, has recognized that evangelicals have sold their birthright to psychology. Likewise, Harry Specht and Mark Courtney, in their book Unfaithful Angels, How Social Work Has Abandoned Its Mission, observe regarding the influence of psychology on Christianity in general, ministers and priests have come to look and act more like psychotherapists, just as psychotherapists have come to look and act more like priests. Their point is well taken. Just as psychology has become the secular religion in our culture, turning psychologists into our cultural priests, likewise, true religion has become psychologized, turning pastors into psychologists, making the difference between the two minimal. Barbara Defoe Whitehead, in her book, The Divorce Culture, also recognizes the tragedy of this evangelical sellout to unbiblical psychological concepts by first recognizing the infiltration of psychology into liberal thinking and then observing, perhaps more surprisingly, psychology made inroads into the evangelical denominations. Unlike the mainliners, evangelicals tended to use psychology to support traditional religious teaching on marriage and family, although over time they too came to view marital dissolution in more psychological terms. End of quote. It is difficult to explain why these secular sources are far more aware of the corruption of evangelical thinking by psychology than are pastors and theologians. Perhaps it is because evangelicals have become so enamored by psychology and so overwhelmed by its popularity in the secular culture and within the evangelical community that they have made the assumption that it is okay without seriously scrutinizing the concepts that it offers. Or perhaps they have adopted the approach of Nero, fiddling with lesser theological issues while psychological concepts were burning Rome. Whatever the reason, evangelical theologians and pastors have failed in their gatekeeping responsibilities, allowing a Trojan horse filled with the multiple errors contained in psychological personality theories to pass through the gates leading to the hearts and minds of their constituency. The point we are making here is that this failure to identify the errors contained in personality theories has not only resulted in the pollution of evangelical minds and hearts, but it has prevented evangelicals from recognizing their need to develop their own psychological core rather than adopting a faulty secular one. The result of this failure to develop a genuine biblical psychology is that most evangelical counselors either take a truncated approach, rejecting extra-biblical input, or a muddied approach, mixing biblical and psychological ideas almost indiscriminately, with the psychological ideas being the predominant components. Neither of these options represents optimal help for God's people who are seeking help and counseling. Rather, the need is to fully develop a biblical core to the counseling approach and to add to that core a periphery consisting of valid extra-biblical expertise. The bottom line is that one of the great needs of the evangelical community in our time is for counselors who are thoroughly biblical and yet thoroughly professional. In our society, characterized by broken families, sexually explicit and violent entertainment, and drug and alcohol abuse, and lacking teaching on morality or emphasis on discipline, the need for such counselors will increase in the years to come. For that reason, I am glad that you are studying counseling. I trust that you will become one of the optimal types of counselors described above. As you do, I am confident that the Lord will use you to be a blessing to many of His people. Thank you for taking this course. And that brings us to the end of 11.